It's time!
Hey, Dave, listen up, please.
Sometimes a warrior just has to kind of lay down on the ground for a minute, just stay there for a second and have a good bleed.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know, something amazing.
Matt, for maybe the win.
Gafford, buckle up!
Welcome into the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Seth Campbell, joined as always by Scotty Bordelon, writer for Whole Hog Sports. And Scotty, it was a 1-1 week, I guess, since the last time we were here for the Razorbacks. They get a big road win beating Alabama, but the game everybody wants to talk about, so let's talk about it. Auburn, a game that you felt like you could have won. You really felt like that this game was one that Arkansas had in the bag, up 11, and then it all slips away.
You're up 11 points with less than 6 minutes to go, and the second Arkansas went up 11 points twice, I think, as Arkansas hit a couple of free throws after one of its guards drove to the rim, I think in transition, hit a couple of free throws, and then the next time down, I believe, Jalen Harris
with a fantastic move.
Yeah, probably showed us his best individual play of the season, spinning off of a defender to get into the lane, and then he challenged an Auburn forward at the rim, and the Auburn guy just didn't want anything to do with it. So Jalen puts down a dunk, and then he just kind of poses for a second in front of the photographers and the cameramen and all that. And, I mean, at that point, everybody in the building was sensing blood in the water, I think. And the energy in the building for a Tuesday night was phenomenal.
Yes.
And, I mean, I was sitting in my seat, and I'm thinking just about how big this win was going to be for Arkansas. And just the way that Eric Musselman has kind of, you know, work this roster into just what we're seeing on the floor, and like how he's maneuvered everything. I mean, he was without Isaiah Joe, and is going to be without Isaiah Joe for a while, on the same day that Eric Musselman announced that Isaiah Joe had arthroscopic knee surgery on that right knee that's been bothering him since Ole Miss. He was named one of the 10 finalists for the Jerry West Award, right?
Yes.
So you're without that guy, and you've got number 11 in the country on the ropes on your home floor.
They just beat Kentucky.
Yeah, they just beat Kentucky. They're 19-2, rolling, one of the best teams in the league. And it just slipped away, dude. It was really hard to watch, and it was like, Arkansas still had a chance to win in regulation, and they had a chance to tie in overtime. But, man, Auburn's just pretty good. Samir Doty's really good. Isaac Okoro was really good for them. The only freshman in their starting lineup, he was like plus 19 in the game. Plus 17 or plus 19 was really good. You know, it's weird to think that Arkansas lost a game on its home floor in which it was up 11 with less than 6 minutes to go. They hit 10 threes in the game, and they lose at home. It's just kind of hard to believe that. But I think more than anything, shot selection after you go up 11 was kind of a concern, at least in my opinion.
So let's get a few things straight here on the Basketball Podcast in Mid-America. And this is really for you out there. Scotty and I, Scotty's been to every single home game that there has been. He's seen, and we've watched every single game Eric Musselman has played. If you have listening and you've watched and seen Eric Musselman's teams play, you know for a fact this is what they do. You can be angry with it, But Arkansas has won games because after 8 minutes left in the game, they limit possessions.
Sure.
Musselman has six guys that he can regularly depend on. Six in this lineup. With Isaiah Joe out, he had six guys. So he's obviously going to go and try and limit possessions. That's what he did in this game, and it ended up costing him the game. But Arkansas has won a few games by limiting possessions. So you take the good with the bad. And before you can get angry, like that, this is one of the times that they lost. But I think it was a smart move by Musselman to limit possessions at the end of the game because you don't want and need Auburn running them down the court. You played six. I mean, technically, you played, I think, up to eight guys in the game. But realistically.
Yeah, Ethan Henderson and Jitaw Silla got in.
But realistically, you have six guys that you can depend on regularly. So you have them in. And on the court, you don't want to run up and down the court with Auburn. When you have 11 points, you are trying to limit those possessions. Now, what you said is right, Scotty. The shot selection is a little rough. I think they got one-dimensional with Mason. And when a guy puts up 40 points, you almost want to be one-dimensional at times. But also, at the same time, when they would run the ball and the shot clock down to under 5, 10 seconds, it was just they were going to give the ball to Mason. Mason's going to shoot a fadeaway three or try and drive, and Auburn's going to double team him. I didn't feel like there was enough ball movement when they decided to try and run the offense. Get the ball going around a few times and then shoot a three. Mason holding the ball for the last 8 minutes of the game, basically taking every shot, was not great in my opinion.
The thing that I didn't really mind, the fact that Mason had the ball in his hands a lot, like he's the guy on the roster right now who is best equipped to take the air out of the ball. And the shot clock winds down, 11 to 13 seconds. I think that's when Musselman likes to, motion to one of the forwards, hey, ball screen, high ball screen. And he goes and sets a pick and you just kind of see what happens, what unfolds. What I wasn't crazy about was when the shot clock wound down under 10 seconds and Mason had the ball and he gave it up and the ball found the hands of Jalen Harris, we saw that happen quite a bit last year when he was the primary ball handler, and more often than not, Arkansas didn't get a great shot toward the end of the shot clock. And, after Jalen's dunk, I'm looking at Arkansas' shooting chart from Stat Broadcast. After Jalen's dunk, Arkansas didn't take a shot for the next couple minutes. So I think they got to the free throw line there. Like Adrio Bailey missed a couple of free throws.
Yeah,
that proved to be pretty big.
We'll get to that in a second.
After that, Mason misses a jumper and then he misses another three. The next two shots that Arkansas gets is a Jalen Harris three and an Adrio Bailey three. Adrio's three came with 1:13 on the clock, like left in regulation. I don't think, like, he's open. That's just not a shot I'm particularly crazy about.
Yeah, when the shot clock running down.
Right.
And he hit one earlier in the game, but you're right. I think, what was he, one for three from behind the arc? I'll check that, but yeah.
Something like that. And then Jalen finished the game 0-for-5.
Which is not great. But, yeah, I would have liked to see a little more ball movement, but I see what you're saying, Scotty, and you want Mason with the ball. I just felt like Auburn was going to put – when you started running down the shot clock, Auburn was going to put two guys on Mason. And if they put two guys on Mason, simple math says that somebody else is open. And I didn't think Arkansas found – the open man with under 8 minutes to go in the second half. And I think it cost him the game. There's a lot of things that you can look back on in this game. We thought about free throws, and free throws is something that I think everybody that was watching the game thought about. But also, Jitaw Silla comes in at the end of the first half for
eight seconds.
8 seconds. Allows a backdoor cut that goes in for a layup. That's 2 points. 2 points that don't allow to go in the game, 2 points, you win.
And it also brings Mason Jones back on the floor. Like, Musselman was going to try to steal a little bit of rest for Mason because Mason, his back's got to be hurting because he's been carrying this offense for, the last 2 weeks,
Yes.
It seems like ever since we found out Isaiah was
limited. The Ole Miss game.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting that Silla got in when he did, because when he runs to the scores table, I think I leaned over to you and was like, "Oh, we got a Gene Tosilla sighting." And I said, I wonder who he's checking in for. And it was Mason. Mason sits on the bench for 8 seconds. Eight seconds come off the clock. He gives up a backdoor, fouls the guy. Two free throws later, Mason's back in the game.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be better than that, dude. You're in the game for 8 seconds.
And Arkansas is going to depend on those guys now until Isaiah Joe comes back. You have to depend on them, and you got to do better than that. Can't allow a backdoor cut.
Yeah, so that's the first thing that you do when you come into a game. Like that's how your role becomes
smaller than it already is.
As minimized as it is now, it might get smaller. And Eric brought that up after the game. Like he said that, you know, there was some, obviously there's emphasis on what happened in the last 6 minutes, but he said he's also thinking back to Silla getting beat backdoor, you know, right off the bat when he comes in, not allowing Mason to get an extended breath, you know, maybe before a media timeout, which gives Mason, like, if Silla can stay on the floor and give Mason a break before that media timeout, that's however many seconds that is before the stoppage, and then it's another 2.5 or 3 minutes that he's off his feet during the timeout. But I don't know, man. They've got to get more. I thought Ethan Henderson was pretty active the other night, and I like the way that he battled on the glass. I don't remember how many rebounds he came up with. I would have to look real fast, but I thought he had one rebound. So his
and it was an offensive rebound.
Yeah, that's true. And I thought his activity was solid for the 4 minutes he was in. And Gene Tosilla did come up with a steal, I think, in his 2 minutes. But you hate to just be like, dude, you got to give us more in 2 minutes. But
dude, you got to give us more in 2 minutes.
Yeah, you got to be a little bit more aware on the defensive side of the ball, and just not great awareness.
He's
on
been,
his part.
Not to pile on Silla by any stretch of the imagination, but he's been slightly disappointing this year. So, in his playing time, I figure you don't bring in a grad transfer like him unless you think that he's going to have an impact on this game and on this team, and he just hasn't really had that big impact. But also, to say, Musselman has mentioned multiple times in press conferences how when he's on the court, he can grab a few rebounds and stats that aren't points. Musselman sees and is appreciative for, and they do need him on this team, but at the same time, he hasn't been as big of a weapon as Arkansas would have liked to have.
And he's only played 10-plus minutes in 3 games since the turn of the new year. In the last 3 games, he's played 6 minutes. And against Alabama, he played 1, but he grabbed 2 rebounds in that 1 minute. That's kind of like, if you're going to have – a small role, which I think we all understand that has been defined to him. Like, he's got a small role, probably much smaller than he anticipated. Because I remember back during the summer, you and I went over and talked to him, and he said he was going to be ready. Like, he wants to be a pro. He said he was going to be ready, but it just hasn't materialized for him. And I don't know if it's like a confidence thing, or I think he's just kind of limited a little bit on both ends. Offensively, I don't think he's that much of a playmaker. I think he's only got like 2 assists all season, which is
not great.
I mean, like I said, we're not trying to pile on him, but one of the things that, like, the one of the best things that he does is run at one of his teammates and, you know, just kind of pitch him the ball with 2 hands, like, and then tries to maybe set some sort of a screen. On the defensive end, I think he's been kind of a liability at times, just like against Auburn. But, you know, at times he can be a guy who rebounds in bunches, and you know, on a team that is lacking size and guys who can, you know, consistently grab rebounds, that can be pretty valuable in short stretches.
Moving on, so he don't continue to pile on to Gene Tolsilla. Poor guy. All right. Free throw shooting is something you can harp on. Something that a lot of people say, well, I could shoot free throws, and a lot of people can. Maybe not in front of 14,000 people, but a lot of people can shoot free throws. Okay, and that's one part of the basketball game that everybody's like, I can do that. I think putting all of that aside, Scotty, I think what is most frustrating about the free throw shooting from this Arkansas team is that they did shoot free throws well early in the season. If this was just a poor free throw shooting team throughout the entire year, then you would go, okay, don't get us to the line. That's not going to be our strategy to drive, draw fouls, and try and get to the line. But when you had Mason Jones, who was shooting 90% for basically half of the season, when you have other guys in the team was shooting 70-something percent from the free throw line, like, that was one of your strengths.
Yeah, and it was then, like, high 70s, right? Or mid-70s?
Yeah, and then it just disappears. That's what's frustrating about free throws with this team.
Yeah, and you hate to see a guy like Mason, who had just, I think Tuesday was all wrapped into one, just another phenomenal night from him. And he goes for 40 again. That's three straight games with 30-plus. Like,
nobody.
No player in the history of Arkansas basketball has ever done that.
Like, okay, you're going to get sidetracked just a second. Put a pause on that, Scotty. Think about that. Bobby Portis, no. Corliss Williamson, no. Reed, no. Dillard, no.
Moncrief,
Brewer, the triplets.
Marvin Delph, none of those guys did it.
Barford, Macon, if you want to go recent. Gafford, none of those guys went for 30-plus in three straight games. The one guy to do it is on a team that has seven guys when they're all healthy. And he's carrying the team. That's insane. That's insane to think about.
It's pretty remarkable, yeah.
Okay. Unpause. That's what you're saying.
So I think Tuesday was just, it was an unbelievable night from Mason. And you hate to see a guy who has a historic night like he did. I think he's the third player, and I'm blanking on the third guy, in the SEC who to have scored 40 plus twice.
It's Shaq.
It's Mason Jones, Shaquille O'Neal.
And a guy from Kentucky.
And Jody Meeks.
Thank you.
That's pretty damn good company, man. That's good. That's a good place to be. And, you know, I think one of the games that Jody Meeks scored 40 in, I think that was at Arkansas. I could be mistaken.
He went off against Arkansas, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, I'm pretty sure he did. But that's awesome company to have. And the part that I just kind of hurt a little bit, just trying to relate to Mason a little bit, the way he was feeling. He comes into the post-game interview room. He's the only Arkansas guy that comes in, and he puts the blame for the loss on himself.
That's tough.
And he doesn't want to talk about scoring 40 for the second time this year, or, you know, the fact that he scored 30 plus in three straight games, or the fact that he scored 19 plus in six straight games, or the fact that he's shot, you know, double digit free throws in, you know, I think it's four straight games now and five out of the last six games. He's been tremendous getting to the free throw line. Like, I wrote about that, I think it was on Monday. He's now eighth in the country out of every player in the country. He's drawing 7.5 fouls a game. Jeez. Only 7.5 fouls per 40 minutes played. Only seven other guys in the nation are getting to the line or drawing whistles at a higher rate. And so just, it was hard to listen to him just shoulder the blame for that after scoring 40 points. But to your point on free throws, like, he was 11 out of 16. And the game before that, he was 6 out of 13.
Yeah.
And so his – whatever's going on at the free throw line is – it didn't cost Arkansas at Alabama, obviously. But those five misses against Auburn turned out to be pretty big. And you can't obviously put it on Mason. Like Mason's putting it on himself. There were obviously other factors, but –
I mean, just look going through, Bailey, 0 for 2 from the line. Sills, 2 for 4. That's 50%. That's not great. Then you go down, and the only other person to shoot free throws was Harris, who went 3 for 4. You'll take 3 for 4 from the line. But the 2 for 4 appearance from Sills and the 0 for 2 from Bailey, you got to get 1 point from Bailey when you go to the line. Or I think Zimmerman on the radio talks about, if you go 0 for 2 from the line, it's basically a turnover.
Right.
You're just giving the ball back to the other team and going back down. So
it's like we talked about last week, like guards missing free throws is as good as a turnover.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the guys that, you know, you feel like you should be able to count on to knock free throws down.
I want to talk about Mason, and you said he put the blame solely on himself. That, from what I saw, so I can't, you know, I'm not with Mason constantly, but as a person in the media, you have to observe from what you've seen and what you can see, the times you get to see these guys. You can't be with them all the time. That Mason that we saw on Saturday, no, Tuesday, on Tuesday.
Saturday too, I guess.
Was a complete, well, the one I'm talking about is the one in postgame when he's putting the blame all on himself. Mm-hmm. Is a completely different Mason than what I saw last year. Last year, Arkansas lost a home game to Florida when he went for over 30.
Right.
And he came into the media room, and I distinctly remember this, and it almost rubbed me the wrong way a little bit if I was an Arkansas fan, because Mason came in and was almost smiling. And I don't know what it was, but as a Razorback, I was a student then, so I wasn't a reporter, so I could have a little bit of bias. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know if I like that or not. The guy is smiling because he dropped 30 and almost happy about it. But, the words that he was saying were, yeah, we should have won. You know, this needs to be a team. It doesn't really matter about my stats. But his body language didn't portray that.
Mm-hmm. Didn't really match up.
I think it's a completely different Mason that we've seen this year. And I think that can be credited to Musselman, the staff, and how they're molding this guy, and the maturity. Just another year in the league and another year growing up. That this Mason out there playing basically by himself, it seemed like at times, was like, yeah, I wasn't good enough. I dropped 40, but I wasn't good enough to lead the team. And that to me shows a maturity, and I think why this team is overachieving what they were projected to in the preseason.
This Mason Jones is, like you said, he's a completely different player than he was last year. I was talking on the radio the other day. I think Mason, after Tuesday, I think he has vaulted himself into. He's absolutely in the conversation for SEC Player of the Year this year. I mean, you consider the jump they made from last year, like coming into last season. I think there was a little bit of intrigue surrounding Mason just because he's a junior college guy, and some junior college guys can come in and, you know, make an immediate impact like a Daryl Macon or a Jalen Barford. But you weren't exactly sure what you were going to get from him. You feel like you could look at his numbers at Connor State, and his points per game was solid, rebounds were solid, and so you're thinking you might be able to get a little bit of that from him at Arkansas, but it's going to take time. And there were points last year where he might have been the best player on the team at times. He could momentarily take over games. He could hit big shots, get to the rim, and we saw that a little bit in doses. Now we're seeing it for stretches. And now he is on, I mean, he's, like I said earlier, he scored 19 plus in 6 straight games, 30 plus in 3 straight. And, you know, since that Western Kentucky game, when he went 1 of 9 from the floor, scored 8 points, he's been just on a completely different I think I tweeted the other day, a completely different plane of existence. Like, even in the games against Vanderbilt and Ole Miss when he couldn't buy a shot, I think he was, gosh, I'm not real good at math. He was 0-for-7 from the floor against Vanderbilt, and he was 3-of-12 against Ole Miss. But he had 17 assists in those games. So he's got enough awareness to understand that his shot's not going. He just didn't have it those days, but he got other guys going. He got Isaiah Joe going at Ole Miss. I think of his 9 assists, I think 5 or 6 of them were to Isaiah. So he understood who the hot hand was. But of late, the hot hand's been him, and he's carrying this team about as well as he can. And it's a huge credit to the work he put in the offseason. He's slim, he's trim, he's fit. And he likes to tell everybody about how big he was when he was in high school. He is in the best shape of his life, and he has to be, considering, I mean, the last 2 games he's played 45 minutes and 38 minutes, and he's gone for 70 points.
Nuts.
Pretty remarkable.
Just nuts.
Pretty remarkable.
All right. You mentioned a little bit of the SEC Player of the Year conversation. Let's go there, Scotty. I think it's a 3-man race right now. 4. I'll say 4-man race. Edwards at Georgia, Reggie Perry, Mississippi State, Nick Richards at Kentucky, and Mason Jones.
Yeah.
Right now, everybody seems to think that Edwards has the upper hand. It's just unique because the best player in the league is not necessarily on the best team in the league. You always think of a guy that could be player of the year coming from Kentucky, or in this case, in this year, LSU has the best record in the league. And they have some good players, don't get me wrong, but nobody that is the player of the year caliber. Richards is very important to Kentucky. I've seen a few stats posted on Twitter. Like, if he goes for over 10 points, Kentucky is close to being undefeated on the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need him. I think their last loss, their only loss of the season when Richards went over 10, I think, was against Auburn. The only time that they've lost was against another top-ranked team. So I think it goes without saying that he's important to the team, but this team, without Mason Jones, would not even be close to the NIT tournament, much less the NCAA.
That's true. And in terms of, like, the player of the year race, I'm going to take year 4 – and I'm going to take Anthony Edwards out of it because he's going to win freshman of the year.
Okay.
And so I think it's a 3-man race between Mason, Nick Richards, and Reggie Perry. And I think all 3 of those guys have strong arguments. Mason has just been flat out phenomenal in conference play. Nick Richards, I think, has got 10 double doubles this year. Reggie Perry is probably in that same ballpark.
He always plays well against the Hogs.
Yeah. all 3 of those guys are just out of this world. And I mean, obviously Arkansas fans will probably be a little bit upset if Mason doesn't win it because they're backing their guy, obviously. And he's got as good of a case as any of the other 2 guys. It would be hard for me to laugh at whoever is chosen, because all 3 of those guys are great, and they're so individually important to what their teams do. Like, Kentucky's got great guards, but their front line, I think, is what, when their front line is playing well, I think that's what can separate them and make them a national title contender. Reggie Perry is the reason, like, one of the main reasons that Mississippi State is in NCAA tournament conversations, and Mason Jones the same way. We're pretty lucky to get to see these guys all playing at the same time. It's our job to watch these guys play. Like, it's
right.
It's pretty great.
Mason Jones did it all for the Arkansas Razorbacks, scoring 40 points, and You like to see that, but also, I've said multiple times on this podcast, and I'll continue to reiterate it, Arkansas, to win games, needed 2 out of their 3, I'll call them the big 3 for the Razorbacks, to go off. you lost one of them in Isaiah Joe, and Jimmy Witt came up with 0 points, and you lost the game to Auburn. Mason almost scored enough to make up for the fact that Jimmy Witt scored zero, but even with Witt shooting as bad as he did on the night, and he started out, I don't have the stats in front of me, but he shot a few times in the first half and weren't going in, and it just seems like he clammed up in the second half.
Yeah, he was 0-for-6 in the first half, and I think only took one shot after the break.
The offense wasn't designed when you started the season to go through Jimmy Witt. It wasn't designed for Jimmy Witt to put up points. Jimmy Witt was going to handle the ball, be a rebounder, was the main reason that this dude was brought in to rebound for a team that's not very big. Everything has shifted. Everything on this team has shifted from the beginning of the season. Nobody thought Mason would be the scorer he was. Nobody thought Isaiah would go down. Jimmy has to be a scorer now. And not put up 40 like Mason, not even put up 20 a game, but he needs to get to 8 to 12.
At least, yeah, like he's got to have a game. I don't know if he's got to have a game as great or as solid as he was against Alabama,
right.
But you got to have, I think, something similar.
You got to be a threat on the offensive end. When you only shoot one time in the second half, all of a sudden everybody eases off of you and goes and looks at Mason. Or the hot hand, which was Mason and probably will be Mason moving forward without Isaiah Joe. You've got to be a point getter because you've got to. You have to, with this offense, take away somebody from guarding Mason Jones. Be a threat.
The thing is with Jimmy, too, if his – I don't want this to come off the wrong way because Jimmy's been terrific for vast majority of the season. And he's carried Arkansas at times, like earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
When Jimmy's shot is not falling, his contributions on the offensive end kind of become minimal in a way because he starts at point for this team, and he's got, I think, 8 assists in 9 league games.
Not great.
So it's not like he's routinely taking defenders off the bounce, creating open shots for teammates. Like, it's just that's what the numbers say, and sometimes that's the truth. Like, he's not creating tons of opportunities for teammates, and some of that is because Mason's got the ball. Like, Mason's become really ball dominant over the last couple of weeks, and that's not a shot at Jimmy. That's just kind of
the offense.
Yeah, it's just kind of how it is.
Yeah, you're exactly right, though. When he doesn't have his mid-range shot, he's not great. But I just think in a game, it's hard. I'm not trying to single out Jimmy at all because most of the time, somebody bigger than him is guarding him. So it's hard for him to take it to the rack. His game is the fadeaway jumper because that's the open shot that he can get, or semi-contested,
yeah,
but the shot that
he can
get
take,
off.
He can take those if opponents put a forward on him, like he's quick enough to get around the guy. Like we saw that against Alabama. I think whoever the color commentator was for that game was like, Jimmy Witt, I've never seen Jimmy Witt take the ball to the rim more than he has today. I was like, well, it's working. He's got a 6'7" guy who's slower than him defending him. Of course he's going to get to the rim and not settle for jumpers. And I think that's – and Auburn's so long.
Yeah, they
Auburn's
they are.
Really long. They defended him really, really well in the paint the other day. Not every team in the league obviously has the length that Auburn does.
And I don't know if that came through on the TV screen because sometimes when you're watching games on TV, you don't see length or size because everybody's just
big out
on the court.
It was pretty stunning the other night watching Auburn's defense get their hands on shots and passes that normally those shots are getting at least getting to the rim or to a teammate. Those balls were getting knocked away and it was turning into transition.
It's happened twice this year, both times at Bud Walton Arena against Kentucky and against Auburn, where I've sat there in my seat watching the game and go, like, that guy's just better. Like, that guy's longer, so he can knock that ball away. You got to be better than that when you're playing these teams. It's tough.
There was one really good example, I think, and it's just kind of mundane in the flow of the game. But Mason brings the ball up the floor, and he just tries to make a pass to the left wing. and the pass gets picked off. Auburn was so long, and they had the recipe to slow Jimmy down. And I think, you know, Bruce Pearl, once he figured out Isaiah Joe was not going to play, I think he was like, we're gonna focus on Mason, but we obviously know that Mason is going to get his buckets. He's going to get to the line. He's going to create a little bit for others. But kind of in the same way that Arkansas was like, we're going to let Jaden Shackelford go off for Alabama the other night, we're going to try to limit John Petty and Kyra Lewis. Their focus was, you know, if Mason Jones beats us, more power to him.
Yeah, if he puts up 45.
But we're not going to let Jimmy Witt, Desi Sills, those type guys, role players, not going to let them beat us.
That may be the recipe for here to beat Arkansas. Now, some teams in the SEC may not have the talent to match up and limit the role players, but the recipe may be don't put your best defender on Mason and see if he can put up 56 points to try and beat you and shut down every other person, which with Arkansas, without Isaiah Joe, can work, surprisingly enough, and scarily enough for Musselman and the Razorbacks. All right, before we move on, Scotty, and wrap this podcast up, I have two questions, or I guess I have a statement and a question. For those of you wondering, I looked up Isaiah Joe's injury on the internet, and the internet never lies.
Right.
In case you're wondering. But I did try and go to a reputable source, and if you're wondering how long that takes, first of all, I'm putting out a disclaimer. We have not heard from Musselman. We have not heard from the staff. We have not heard from anybody at the University of Arkansas how long Isaiah Joe will be out.
Right.
His injury and his time off is indefinite right now. That's just all they've said, and that's probably all they will say. But from the research that I have done, the surgery that he had and getting back to sports and physical contact said 4 to 6 weeks. 4 to 6 weeks before he can be full go.
So that's putting him back. If that is accurate, that's putting him back mid-March. So for like probably the SEC tournament.
If you got him.
Or postseason.
If you got him at 4, he would be ready for the LSU game at home. One of the last games of the regular season.
Right.
If you got him at 6, it would be after the SEC tournament. You wouldn't get him until, hopefully, you're making the NCAA tournament. That's huge. That's crucial. And that's something to watch out for. And I think this injury kind of put the final nail in the coffin, I could say, of Isaiah's, final nail in the coffin, but I think that this injury will put Isaiah Joe back enough that he will think about coming back for another year and probably will.
Definitely got a decision to make. I think there's two ways to look at it. You can rest this knee and get it ready for your junior year, or you can take this injury as, well, I've kind of, my knee is not where it was however long ago, and I need to cash in now. There's really two ways to look at it.
Both are logical.
Yeah, both are logical, definitely. Because if he comes back his junior year, there's no way to know. Like, he could re-injure it. You obviously don't want to see that happen, but I mean, he's gonna have to make a big decision, weigh the pros and cons. And you know, he's got a great family. His dad's a really smart guy. His parents are tremendous people, smart people. They're gonna make a good decision. A decision that's best for him, I think, for sure.
And I think the decision will make sense either way, like you said. I've kind of thought that I'm leaning towards he would come back, but I don't know his body. He's the only one that knows his body, and if he thinks that he needs to cash in now, then go make money, kid. I mean, that's as simple as it is. Go make money and try. At the beginning of the year, I figured Isaiah Joe would be gone, and I figured Mason Jones would be back.
Right.
Right now, I say that Isaiah Joe will probably be back without – I shouldn't say probably. I think Isaiah Joe will be back, and Mason might try and – test out the pro waters for sure.
Isn't it remarkable, kind of incredible, that that's how we're talking about Mason now.
Yes, absolutely.
He's everything he's done throughout this entire year has opened new doors for him, and it's got to be pretty exciting for him.
The thing that amazes me the most about Mason is he's not the tallest, he's not the quickest, he's not the best ball handler. He just puts the ball in the bucket.
He's the craftiest dude around. He's the craftiest dude you'll meet.
He just puts the ball in the bucket because his first step, a lot of guys you want to see speed so that they can translate that to the next level. His first step's not the fastest.
No.
It's really not. But he just continually finds a way to put the ball in the bucket, which is insane.
And one of the things I asked, I think back on Monday, I wrote about Mason just being on a tear unlike any other that he's been on at Arkansas, and the role that he's kind of crafted for himself. And then I also got into, you know, him being top 10 nationally in fouls drawn per 40 minutes, which is pretty remarkable considering that the guy, like you said, doesn't have the greatest first step and he's not the quickest, not the fastest. But he is so crafty, and Eric Musselman gave a great quote. He said he's a little bit unorthodox once he puts the ball on the floor, and that can mean a bunch of different things, whether he's herky jerky or he's, you know, good enough to create contact, finish through contact. You can go on and on and on, but it's just been fascinating to kind of watch him rise from where he was when he got here last season to being in conference player of the year discussions. If there was a most improved player in the league award, he would probably win that too. And he's opened new doors for him, and it's been pretty fun to watch because Mason's a really likable kid. He's the type that'll go, he'll go score 30 at Alabama, and then he'll show up at Christchurch on Sunday morning and bring Khalil Garland with him. You know, so he's been really fun to cover, and you know, over these last 9 games, I don't know that we can expect him to go for 30 every night or every other night, but he's going to give everything he has. And you know, if he gives everything he's got and plays as efficiently as he has, keeps shooting the ball well, knocks down more free throws, Arkansas is going to be in a really good position. They're going to like where they are by the end of the regular season.
All right, Scotty, let's wrap it up here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. My last question to you, Arkansas has 9 games left. There's 3 classifications that I want you to put games into. I want you to pick 2 games, and they can be against the same team because Arkansas has a few of those, that Arkansas must win for them to advance the NCAA tournament. I want 2 games that Arkansas should win, and then I want you to take out the other ones and give me 1 game that Arkansas can afford to lose.
Oh, that's tough. I've got it like broken up into like winnable games.
I think the first one's one of the most easiest ones. The ones you can't lose, I think, is a team.
It's Missouri, right?
A team up north that you can't lose 1, much less 2, to that team.
Yeah, Arkansas has got Missouri twice this month, and they've also got Tennessee twice this month.
So that's 4 out of your 9.
Right, and that's pretty solid. Like think about this. So you got Missouri and Tennessee. Those make up 4 of your last 9 games. Also in that mix is Texas A&M. It's on the road, but it's Texas A&M. Like their KenPom rating, they're 155. Arkansas is at the moment 34. So you feel like you should be able to win that game. That's 5. You've got Georgia on the road. Georgia has blown 2 20-point leads in conference play.
Yikes.
And you know, Anthony Edwards is going to be a load to handle, but Georgia overall, not a great team. So what does that put you at 6?
That's at 6 if you can win 6. If you can go 6-3 down the stretch, you make the NCAA tournament.
Pretty good. But you've got a chance for – you got to play Florida on the road. Florida has shown to be fairly vulnerable at certain points of the season. Obviously, they just came back. Florida was one of the teams that Georgia blew a 20-point lead to. They were up 22 points in the second half at Florida and lost.
That's not great. Like,
but Florida has lost to – they've been blown out by Missouri.
That's not
lost
great.
To, yeah, they lost a tight one to LSU.
SEC
got,
basketball fever, baby.
They got run out of the building, their own building, by Baylor, which that's fine. Then lost to Mississippi State at home. I think Florida was up 14, 15 points in that game, maybe 16 points. That's not great. So that – what I did was I put these games into winnable, tough, and both. I think Florida – I put Florida in the tough category.
Yeah.
But I think there's a you can make a case where you can throw that into the both category. Because like I said, they have been a little bit vulnerable at times.
Arkansas's home schedule this year just didn't shake out well in the SEC for them. They shouldn't have lost the home game to South Carolina, but now that they have and you've lost that home game to South Carolina, you get Missouri at home and you get Tennessee at home. You have to win both of those games for sure. But then you think about the other teams that they have left at home. Mississippi State, that's a tough game. LSU.
You're going to need that one.
That's a tough game.
That's a game that if Arkansas wins, you know, that also hurts. That could also hurt in a way Mississippi State's
standing
their bubble chances a little bit because they're like, I think, what are the first four out?
They were first four out last Saturday.
Okay.
But they won.
Yeah, so they're still
they're probably
they're still
first
battling.
Four,
and that could be that bubble is could be a spot that Arkansas might find itself. So, I mean, you got to beat the teams that are in similar situations.
The thing that stands out to me that this team is they have good wins against Indiana on the road, Georgia Tech on the road in the non-conference, and then winning on the road in the SEC. But the problem is there's not a win that you go and hang your hat on. There's not a win that you can take to the bank for the rest of the season and go, this team, this is a quality win. You almost had that against Kentucky. You almost had that against Auburn. But this team needs a win like that. And it can be so low as a Mississippi State, but a win over a team that is going to be in the NCAA tournament is what this team needs.
I think you've got to win at least two of the three against Mississippi State at home. You get LSU at home. And LSU just slipped up and gave Vanderbilt its first conference win in like 2 years.
Yeah, SEC is weird.
So, and then the third game is Florida on the road. I think if you can find a way to win two of those three, like Arkansas needs to start protecting home floor, its home court a little bit more, a little bit better, especially for the crowds that they're drawing. They've got to turn those home crowds into, you know, in a big events, and they've got to play well and win. I think they need to win the Mississippi State and LSU games in Bud Walton, and then you know if you can play well at Florida, which is Florida's a tough place to play well. The environment can be pretty rowdy in there, but I think I'm gonna take that Florida game from the tough category into the tough and winnable category because Arkansas has not proven itself to play itself out of a game on the road this year. They've been in every single game they've played, and so as of right now, I've got no reason to believe that they can't hang with Florida and have a chance to win there.
Just something to keep an eye out on. Arkansas has three home games left. No,
four
home games left. Sorry, math is hard sometimes. You have two Saturday home games left. You have Missouri and you have Mississippi State. Something to keep an eye out on. Both of those games are noon tips. Just a little interesting. Both of those games are sold out. Both those games are noon tips, and you're right. You got to start defending your home court.
That's fine. That just means you get to pop the top at like 7 or 8 a.m. that day. So
there you go.
Whatever.
Celebration City for sure. All right, Scotty. It was a pleasure as always. Thanks for joining us.
It was fun, always. And we've got new cover art for the podcast coming.
Yes!
I think.
Yes,
pretty
we do.
Excited about that.
We do. We will promise it. You've already probably seen it if you've clicked on the podcast so far. But that's a big shout-out to the Scotty Borderline.
Shout-out to Ben Goff, too. He got some great photos from Arkansas's the photo that's that is the cover art that we obviously put titles over and our logo over was from Ben Goff. He's worked with HI and the NWADG and with Whole Hog for a while and got a great shot of the crowd at the Texas A&M game, I think, to start conference play.
And shout out to you, Razorback fans, for being there as well. For sure, because the picture wouldn't exist without you. All right, well, as I said, for Scotty Borderline, I am Seth Campbell. Make sure to check out all of Scotty's writings. He's keeping us updated all the time with basketball. You can get more basketball coverage there at wholehogsports.com. That's once again wholehogsports.com. Scotty, it was a pleasure. We'll see you back here next week.